It's time for Craves Gospel Truth with Pastor Don Swarthout, coming to you from Pensacola, Florida. Over the next few minutes, Pastor Swarthout will share from his heart and bring you a message from the Word of God. We would like to invite you to visit our website at christiansforamerica.com. That's Christians, the number four, America.com. It is our prayer that you will be blessed and encouraged by today's message. And now, Craves Gospel Truth with Pastor Don Swarthout from Pensacola, Florida.
Hello, everybody. This is Don Swarthout. Today, I want to introduce my friend who has a great radio voice, and he has offered to help with this program a little bit. And his name is James Coates. How are you, James?
Don, I'm doing great, and such a honor and a privilege to be on the air with you again here at Gospel Truth Center. Been really looking forward to our conversation today.
Well, so am I, except I don't know what we're going to talk about.
We're going to talk about your life.
Oh, my life. Oh, no. Well, shoot, do I have to talk about that?
Well, you know, everybody's got what I call a BC. You know, it's before, you know, before Christ.
Oh,
and
boy.
And then we've got, you know, it's like everybody's life. We've got a black area, then we've got a white
exactly
area.
Right.
So we're
going to
talk a little bit about that today.
Okay, that's good. Well, I might as well talk about that. At least it'll give me something to talk about.
I do have some questions for you, Don.
Oh, okay.
And just some things, you know, I was searching my heart. If I was being interviewed, you know, what would I want the interviewer to ask me? And, you know, I want to talk a little bit about your family. And, you know, you've been on the air for quite a while on many different radio stations and TV stations. And have you ever just recorded a brief story of your life? Have you ever done that?
No, I haven't. I'm really looking forward to this because I have never done this before.
Well, we're going to take our listeners on a journey through.
All right. Well, it'll be quite a journey.
Well, tell us first off a little bit about where you were born and maybe a little bit about your family, your dad, mom, brothers, sisters, if there are any, and just, where are you from? Where is this Don Swarthout from that we hear so much about?
Well, you know, like you said, I was born in Waukegan, Illinois, because my dad was in the Navy, and he was a good softball pitcher. I mean, he was an outstanding softball pitcher.
Awesome.
And he pitched a no-hitter in the ball game, which his team won the U.S. Navy championship.
That's great.
My mother was a great teacher who could make you think, and whether she was right or wrong, you know, it didn't matter. It was good because she made you think. And I lived then with my two brothers who were both younger than I, and I was born in November of 1943.
Wow.
And Al was born in August of 1945, and Tom was born in May of 1951. Mm. Al was kind of the poster child, I guess. He always did everything exactly the right way. And he was mentioned in the Des Moines paper, the Register and Tribune, as one of the top paid Iowa people.
Wow.
And he didn't appreciate that very much, but nonetheless he was. And he was really strong in the areas of accounting and taxes and in the financial area.
No, a real thinker.
Yeah, he really was.
Yeah.
He retired when he was 48 years old.
Wow.
And he paid cash for his house that he bought, which...
He's done
and,
well.
and he really has. He bought two new cars were his first agenda, two brand new cars.
Wow.
And he was a pretty good athlete, although Tom was the person who did well for himself, and also he was a great, and I mean great, basketball player in high school.
Wow.
And was above average as a football player. When he was in college, he learned that he was a superior fighter, both in the ring and on the street.
So he's a sports fanatic as well.
Yeah, he's about 6'1 and real quick, and real strong too. Great. So he had it all going for him, and he was the one who had some inkling of toward a religious background,
mm-hmm.
Besides myself. And my dad in those days, I thought about it, and he was a lot like Jesus was,
mm-hmm.
in a number of ways. He taught me to always ask for what you want and a better way to live your life, and which I guess is rather evident by these two stories. The first story is one that I was sitting in the car, and we were for a ride on Sunday, and we came up to a stop sign, and he was a long time at that stop sign. And I was hoping that he would turn to the left and go out to Belinda, which was a small town about 15 miles out of town. And they had a softball team. And I really wanted to see the girl who was working at the stand there, at the refreshment stand.
Right.
And so when he didn't turn that way, I just flopped out in the back seat and acted put out and all that. And we got home then a little later, and he said, "Don, you were hoping I'd take you out to Belinda, weren't you?" And I said, "Yeah, I was." He said, "Well, you must have been wanting to see that girl out there." And I said, "Yeah, I was."
And that's the average boy for you.
And he said, "I hope that you learned a lesson, and that is, from now on, you have to ask."
Oh.
And then in the in playing baseball, I was a great baseball player. I hit over 500. I hit 741 one year.
Wow!
And over 500. I can't remember what it was the next year. And they asked Dad if he wanted to referee or be an umpire,
uh-huh.
and he said, "Not behind the plate, but I will take second base if you want me to." And I hit a ball, and it was a single, and it was more than a single. It wasn't quite a double, and I stretched it into a double.
Oh, wow.
And it was tight.
That's hustling.
It was close when they threw it into second base. My foot hit the bag, and right behind him, the guy tagged me.
Oh, wow.
And my dad said, "He's out. You're out."
Oh, really?
And on the way home, and the next guy up hit a single, which would have scored me, which would have won the game.
Yeah. Wow.
And
thanks, Dad.
they got out of, well, anyway, it would have won the ball game for us. And Dad said on the way home, I wasn't talking to anybody. And he said, "You were safe, weren't you?" And I said, "Yep, I was." And he said, "Well," he said, "I was pretty sure you were, but," he said, "I was going to make this call, and I was going to be on second base, and I had to make this call, and I had to make it on my son, who, heaven knows, it could have been anybody else, and I would have called them safe."
Wow.
But he said, "I just figured that they'd think that he was showing favoritism toward
wow.
you, and so I called you out."
Hmm. I hadn't even thought of that.
And that was the example of what I mean. He taught me how to live a better life.
Wow.
So
so your dad, is he the one mainly that brought such an interest in sports in your family? Was it through him? Or?
Yeah, it was, except football. The high school he went to didn't play football, mm-hmm. and they only had six or seven people on their basketball team.
Wow.
And they went to the state tournament one year, and they only had one class, and they lost to the eventual state champions.
Wow.
And he was the one that
he's the one
he really would have liked for me to play baseball and so forth. One time he saw Ozzie Smith play,
mm-hmm.
and Ozzie Smith was a junior in college, and he was playing in Clarinda, Iowa for a team that was they had some old guys that pitched, and They were just a so-so team, and he was there for the summer playing with them. And I said to Dad, why don't we go down to the ball game and we'll see this ball game? The guy playing shortstop is pretty good, and he don't hit worth a nickel, but he can field pretty good. And so right after the game, Dad said to me, he said, now that boy is good enough to play Major League Baseball. And I thought to myself, what is he doing in Clarinda, Iowa then, if he's so good? And, you know, I thought Dad was over the hill.
Yeah,
and Ozzie Smith turned out to be one of the best shortstops ever to play the game.
So if you've just joined us and wondering what we're talking about, why are we talking about baseball? Well, we're talking about Don's life and some of the things he did growing up and, you know, heavily involved in sports. And what was it like at home, Don? The average, of course, every family has their struggles. But what was it mainly like at home when you got home from school? Talk about that a little bit.
Well, my dad always gave to everybody that asked him. He just would. And if somebody called him and wanted him to give some money, he'd give him money. He died in the year 2000 at the age of 81. Mom is 89 years old, and she still lives alone at home. Mm. And I remember one thing that she did teach me, which was when I was 18, she taught me to move out into the world and go to work. Mm-hmm. And my mother worked shortly from after the time Tom was born until she was 65.
Wow.
And she was the first woman to be on staff for Hy-Vee Foods, which has grown to cover several states in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
My mom worked as a computer expert for them, and she was there when computers took rooms and rooms.
Yeah.
And I do feel a little sadness leaving my brothers and my mom behind in Iowa, but I know that God wants me to move to Pensacola to work for him, and I guess that I've left them in the past. And when I moved to Denver and Lexington. And so
you've lived everywhere nearly.
Well, the difference is, though, is the distance between Florida and Iowa, and the fact that we're all getting a little older.
Yeah.
And, of course, we are going to a better place when we pass away.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not have any sisters, and so I saved that to the last.
You know, it's really a good thing you didn't have a sister.
Well, you know, really, it probably is. You ask what my home life was like.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought of it as normal.
Just normal.
Life and just, you know, but now that I think about it and talk about it and stuff, there's some areas that we did excel in so forth. So,
wow. Talk a little bit about America in those days. What was America like when you were growing up? Of course, you had no clue you were going to be involved in fighting the ACLU and leading Christians Reviving America's Values. You know, all that was in your future, but what was America like in those days growing up?
Well, to me, and what I say frequently, was that you could believe what your teachers and your parents told you.
Mm.
And America was a land of the free and the home of the brave.
Mm-hmm.
It was the strongest nation in the world. America always seemed to know what was best for people that lived there.
Mm-hmm.
America was home to many immigrants who wanted to come to America because they knew that they would be moving to a land where freedom was important, and America really had a reputation for having the greatest government in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Things that made America great were that they had an individual freedom and the greatest foundation ever portrayed by any nation. And this was portrayed by the Constitution of this great land.
Mm-hmm. So you grew up being proud to be an American.
Oh, man, did I ever. I mean, classroom teachers would tell you about the founding fathers.
They'd
tell you about how godly they were.
Mm-hmm. And, same with me in school. Same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's changed now to where the founding fathers landed has a sign up that says that they landed there in 16 whatever it was, and they just were considered to be rogues and a bunch of people that were out for themselves, mm-hmm. and so forth.
Yeah, and history, the history books have changed.
Oh, and it has. They've changed it.
Yeah.
And that's the silliness of it. Wow. The America I knew was based upon religion, and that religion was Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And the America that I knew was based upon a belief in morality and a belief in God.
Mm-hmm.
And the America that I once knew was based upon the ideas of the founding fathers, which is to say America was based on a belief in morality and a belief in God, mm-hmm. and the Constitution.
So when you were in school, this was drilled into you in class.
Oh,
and
man.
Did you pray in the mornings, do the Pledge of Allegiance?
We did the Pledge of Allegiance. Mm-hmm. I can't remember whether we prayed or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think we did once in a while or
Bible
something.
Reading, maybe?
Well, no, we didn't really read the Bible. The teacher may have read it mm-hmm. to us.
Right.
It's been so long ago, I'm trying to scratch my head and remember. I can't remember who the teacher was.
Been a while, huh?
Yeah. You know, our founding fathers believed in things that were evident to us as children. And in fact, my favorite quote from the founders comes from John Quincy Adams, who said on July the 4th, 1821, the highest glory of the American Revolution was this. It connected in one indissoluble bond the principles of civil government with the principles of Christianity.
Mm.
And if you said that today, you'd lose an election.
Well, sure you would. Wow. So you have seen a major change in our country growing up. Compare it, you know, talk about that, Don.
Mm-hmm.
You know, growing up and now what you see going on in our country. Look at the difference in that.
Oh, boy. You know, maybe the best example that I can think of that was something that I saw in the news just lately, where a lady who was 24 years old had won a lottery, a state lottery, and she got $750,000. And they asked her about the fact that she was on food stamps and was getting $200 a month. And she said, well, I don't see anything wrong with that. I've got two houses to pay for. I have some bills to pay. And, you know, I just think that that's okay.
Wow.
And so it's an entitlement mentality
uh-huh, right.
that she had
yeah.
and that a lot of people have.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in Omaha one time, I didn't mean to say that, but in Omaha one time, I was reading the newspaper and it said, let the federal government help you with your house payment. And I said to my wife, I said, what that should have said is let the federal government get your friends and neighbors to pay for your house for you.
Yeah. Same thing, right?
Yeah, really, really was. And we are strictly an entitlement nation now. And
yeah.
we think that all you have to do is to live and the federal government takes care of the rest.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, your food, your housing and clothing and everything else that you used to go out and get.
So we have a generation now that were brought up with that mentality, you know, holding your hand out. But you grew up not holding your hand out. You went to work at an early age. Talk about that. What age did you start working publicly? Of course, I'm sure you always worked around the house, so forth. But publicly, you may have already covered this, but
mm-hmm.
what was it like, you know, and getting your first job and your dad drilled you to work? And talk about that a little bit.
Well, the first job I had was at 10 years old, and I was mowing grass for other people, and my dad bought me a power lawnmower, and that was the first job I had. And then I went to work publicly, I guess you would say,
mm-hmm.
When I was 14, which you had to be 14 in the state of Iowa to work. And So I went out and went to work for Hy-Vee Foods and worked for them all through high school, through college,
wow,
and so forth.
So today we're interviewing Don Swarthout. This is the Gospel Truth Center, and we're just talking about his life a little bit, some of the things he's done and seen and people he's met. He's met some very important people. You know, I've never met a person like Don. He has met so many different important people, famous people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, how many people do you know that's met Festus from Gunsmoke? You know,
I'd forgotten all about that.
You're the only one that I know has met Festus.
Yeah, that was, well, not only that, I rode to Chicago on a flight with him, and he bought me drinks on the way.
This was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was.
You met Johnny Cash, did you? You met Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, oh, Muhammad Ali was great.
You know?
I shook hands with him, and he shook hands up to my elbow. And I just said to him, you're the greatest fighter that ever walked the face of this earth. And I hope to see you regain the title when you can fight again. And he had the title taken away from him for his stand in the military. And he said, there won't be nothing to that.
Oh, wow.
And there wasn't anything to that.
Wow. So you've traveled this country over. You have lived in various places, different states. You've lived from Denver to Kentucky, and we're going to talk a little later on in our interview about Florida and so forth. But you know, it sounds like you had a really good upbringing, some good qualities, some good things put in you. And now comes the hard question: you fell into alcoholism, and talk about that and what age you were and really who or what was it that influenced you to go in that direction in your life? If things were going good, why and how the drinking?
Well,
if you don't mind talking about it.
No, I don't mind that at all. You know, the main factor behind the reason that I fell into alcoholism was alcohol.
Yeah. It was there.
Yeah, I thought that I could drink for you know, the social bit of it, and I was 36 years old when I first became an alcoholic, and I thought I could get by with drinking socially, but I soon found out that I wasn't able to drink socially. And I really fell fast once I fell.
But you never grew up with it, right? It wasn't in your home.
No, okay. No. In fact, I was probably the worst example of an alcoholic that my parents ever saw. And I found out that I was helpless over alcohol. And the time spent in alcoholism was so bad that I cannot really recall most of that time that I was drunk every day. Except Christmas and Easter.
Those were your church days, I guess.
Yeah, I guess they were. That was about it. And I was the worst alcoholic I ever knew. In fact, I would get up in the morning, and I would go into the shower, and I would have to say to myself, Don, this is the hot water, and this is the cold water.
Wow.
Do not turn on the hot water first, because it will burn you. Then I would get in my old car and I'd say, Don, this is the gas and this is the brake. On your way to work, some of the lights will change from green to red. And if that happens, you will have to take your right foot off of the gas and use it on the brake in order to stop.
Wow.
That's how terrible a shape I was in. And so
I've never heard of anything like that before.
No, I was after several, well, 5 or so years of alcohol, drinking every day, a fifth of booze every day.
Wow.
And
you know, you're blessed to be alive today, to be able to sit here behind this microphone, you know?
Yeah, that really is right. It really is. Nobody's ever said that to me before.
Wow.
But that is true. Now, one of the changes that came about was when I went to AA. And I heard a speaker say that he was a 78-year-old attorney who woke up one day and found out that his wife was about to divorce him, and that his own brother wouldn't lend him a nickel, and that he'd been kicked out of 15 or 20 bars near his office and told to never come back.
Wow.
And then this 78-year-old former attorney said something that was totally unexpected. And that was that he thought they were going to teach him how to drink like a gentleman when he came to AA.
Wow.
And then he said that he thought all the people at AA were crazy. And he started hearing that God talk, and he became convinced that they were crazy. And then the 78-year-old attorney said something that really made a lot of sense to me. And he said, but I have hung around all these years, which was 25, and... it is amazing to me how much better all of you have gotten.
Wow. So just a social sip here and a social sip there, and pretty soon you're hooked.
Oh, yeah. I'd say I was going to drink when I'd go home that night. And on my way, I'd turn in, well, I'll just go in here and order a Coke.
Yeah, yeah.
No. Didn't work out that way.
Was it hard for you to admit that I'm an alcoholic?
Yeah, it was. I think it was because of the fact that I was under the influence of alcoholism, and that was why it was so hard to admit that I was an alcoholic. You know, I didn't want to be an alcoholic, and so I just said, well, you know, I drink a little bit and stuff like that. But there was a man who came on the stage after the attorney was on the stage and said that about 25% of us would be there in a year and be sober, and that that wasn't very many. And he continued to say that in 2 years, about 17% of us would be left. In 3 years, about 13%. 4 years, about 10%. And 5 years, fewer than 10%.
Wow.
Would be sober for the rest of their lives. And that was really really made an impression. It hit me like a ton of bricks did. And I had a much tougher battle in front of me than I had first imagined. And
alcohol's a mean demon.
Oh, it is. It really
is. It destroys homes and lives. And and you know, you see a lot of, and of course, I'm sure it's always been this way, but you see a lot of young people drinking.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That we're going to talk about that a little later, too.
Just, you know, if they could only see what was just right there ready to grab them and just take their life from them.
Yes.
You know, and they will obey that thing. That thing tells you how to live.
Yes, it does.
You know, that thing
really
tells you where you're going to go, and and it leads your life.
Boy, that's right. It really just takes your mind over. And
wow.
I prayed to God and said, God, I don't know whether you're real or not, but if you are can save me from this alcoholism, then I will serve you the rest of my life.
Wow.
And that's what I'm trying to do.
So, looks like we're out of time for this broadcast, but I want to pick it back up on the next broadcast.
Okay.
And Don, it's been a real pleasure being with you today, and we'll pick it up next time and talk a little bit about some other areas of your life and how God brought you out of that horrible life of alcoholism.
Oh, boy, that really was a story, too.
Thanks for listening, and God bless your day.
Yep.
This has been Craves Gospel Truth with Pastor Don Swarthout from Pensacola, Florida. We pray that today's program has been a blessing to you. For more information, visit us online at www.christiansforamerica.com. Once again, that's Christians, the number 4, America.com. Or visit thegospeltruthcenter.com. We would love to hear from you. You can write Pastor Swarthout at 4677 Belvedere Circle, Pace, Florida, 32571. Or you can email Pastor Don at swarthout5, that's the number 5, at AOL.com. Or call 850-736-8613. Once again, that's 850-736-8613. Thank you for listening to Craves Gospel Truth with Pastor Don Swarthout. We look forward to hearing from you.